Several years ago, a man by the name of Thomas Long, I don't know whether that's a familiar name to you or not, he's a very well-known, at least in Christian circles, as a writer. Thomas Long told a story that was part of an article in the Christian Century magazine. It was a story about something that happened in a congregation on a Sunday morning in a certain downtown church. The gospel had been read. The pastor was about ready to begin his sermon, and suddenly a stranger from the balcony stood up, interrupted the service, and said, "I have a word from the Lord." Heads whipped around. Ushers bounded up the balcony like gazelles, and they escorted the man into the street before he could elaborate further on what he had just heard from the Lord. Now, the interesting thing is that every Sunday, every week, preachers in thousands of churches across this land stand up and, in effect, say the very same thing that this man said at that church. I have a word from the Lord. But when the pastor gets ready to preach, there are no alarms that sound. No one is particularly astonished. Nobody is apprehensive. There are no ushers racing to head him out of the building. And if a sudden unexpected shout erupts from the back of a church, all of a sudden everybody gets on edge. But when a preacher comes up and starts proclaiming the gospel for the day, people just sort of sit back, settle in. Let's hear what you have to say. Just don't make it too long. Well, I think about that announcement by the women on that first Easter morning from our gospel today. I look at that as the first Christian sermon ever preached. The women had come back from the graveyard on that Easter morning, and they had brought with them a word about an empty tomb. And then this very astonishing news: he is not here, but he is risen. And to be very clear about this, all Christian preaching really begins with that proclamation. All Christian sermons are simple ripple effects of that word that those women gave on that first Easter morning. And what was the response? Well, you know what the response was. The scriptures said, and you can take your pick by which one you want to choose in terms of a translation, it was an idle tale. It was empty talk. It was a silly story. It was utter nonsense. It was absolute rubbish. So why do you suppose the disciples, who had been told by Jesus said, "I will be raised on the third day," why do you suppose that the disciples did not believe that first Christian sermon? Well, there are several reasons that we can think of. The first one is, I think, that the messengers were women. Now, there's a Jewish translation found in the Mishnah that suggests this. From women, it says, "Let not evidence be accepted because of the levity and temerity of their sex." They didn't believe the women because they were women. They were just talking. They were just saying things. And in that tradition in those days, the word of a woman did not hold a lot of credibility. But there's more to it. After all, the women were simply confirming something that Jesus had already told the disciples. Remember, as I said, before he entered Jerusalem, he told them that he would be killed and on the third day would be risen from the dead. So when the women came back, the news that these words had come to pass, the disciples should have been prepared. They should have been eager. They should have been receptive and believing. But instead, they blew it off as just so much women's talk. Kind of like a lot of what happens on Sunday mornings in churches. So much preacher talk. Let's get the sermon over because we got breakfast afterwards. We got a family gathering we got to get to. Let's not spend a lot of time at church. The other possibility is that maybe the news of the resurrection was just too much to believe. It was just like too good to be true. Years ago when I was a lot younger, there were two children's programs on television that were very popular with parents and kids. One of them was Captain Kangaroo. Remember that one, anybody? Captain Kangaroo. And the other one was Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers. Now, Mr. Rogers is still on television because I've seen his reruns. But Captain Kangaroo had such famous characters as Tom Terrific, Mr. Green Jeans, and Mr. Rogers, of course. Mr. Rogers' neighborhood had really neat places to go. There's a story about a young boy who was a great fan of both Captain Kangaroo and Mr. Rogers. And this boy faithfully watched those two programs every day. Every day he could. One day he heard the news that Mr. Rogers would be paying a visit to Captain Kangaroo on his show. And the little boy was just ecstatic. Both of his heroes were going to be on the same show the same day. And so every morning he'd come up to Mom and Dad and he'd say, "Is today when Mr. Rogers is going to be on Captain Kangaroo?" And finally, when the day arrived, the whole family gathered around the television. There they were together, Mr. Rogers and Captain Kangaroo. The boy watched for a few minutes, then he got up, surprisingly, and wandered out of the room. His father was, like, surprised. He followed him and said, "Son, what is it? Is anything wrong?" And the boy said, "It's just too good. It's too good to be true." And maybe that's part of it, what happens at the resurrection. Maybe the news of this empty tomb, the news of the resurrection, the news of Jesus' victory over death is just too good to believe. Too good to be taken in all at once. And then there's another possibility. Maybe even a deeper, more complex reason for writing off the women's excitement on that first Easter morning. Maybe the disciples were just not receptive. Maybe they were indifferent. Maybe they were resistant. Maybe they just could not or would not accept what had happened. And a clue to this particular understanding can be found actually in the text itself. If you will notice and take the text apart, you'll notice that what is used to refer to these disciples. If you notice initially in the 9th verse of the 24th chapter of Luke, it tells us that the women told the news of the resurrection to the 11. They told it to the 11. That is, 12 disciples minus Judas. And then later in verse 10, I should say, the term changes from the 11 to the apostles. And an apostle, as we know, is someone who is sent out. Disciples are students. Disciples are followers. But apostles are some people who were sent out on a mission. They're not just students. They're not just learners. They are mission-driven evangelists sent out to tell the good news. Now, if Jesus' story had ended on Good Friday, then the apostles would be the 11. They would be the ones who were left from the original group. And after going through their burial rituals and the funeral and the time of grief, they would go back to life as it was. If Jesus' story had ended on Good Friday, then they could be the 11. They would be the final class of Jesus' instructors in his school of religion. They would be students. Students of an inspiring teacher, but one who tragically died. If the story of Jesus ended on Good Friday, then we can close out the book of Luke, and we don't have anything after the crucifixion. But if the news of Sunday is really true, then these disciples have to become apostles. They are the ones who are sent from Jerusalem to Judea and Samaria and all the ends of the earth. Then there will be arrests and shipwrecks and outpourings of the Spirit and persecutions and stonings and miles of weary travel. If we believe the news of this Easter Sunday, then the scary truth is that the story that we hear today is just the beginning. And we will need a book like the book of Acts to tell us what happened after the resurrection and what happened to the apostles who are now the main characters of the story rather than Jesus. The message of Easter is simply this. It's a message that you cannot keep secret. You can't keep it to yourself. The message of Easter is a message that is designed by its nature to be shared, just like the women shared it with the disciples. Shared it with people that were closest to them. And that's what you and I do, I hope. I hope that's part of our life when we share the good news, that we're telling people that are closest to us about the message of Jesus. Because there are words that must be shared. They can't be kept a secret. And they certainly can't be kept to ourselves. That's part of our congregational mission. Our mission is to invite and connect others to God through Christ's love. That's an Easter message. That's an Easter mission. And when you go and leave this place, I hope it is your mission to share that same news with other people who have not heard about Jesus the Christ. There was a small boy who was about 7 years old who was stricken with a very fatal and fast-growing cancer. He had been treated in a hospital with every sort of therapy known to science, but nothing further could be done, according to the doctors. Maybe they could have given him one more dose of some experimental drug, but actually there really was no hope of his recovery. And the side effects of this therapy were just complicate the progression of his disease. So the family and the doctors gathered together in the little boy's room for a final conference before his treatment. They had tried almost everything, and what they could possibly think of next, they didn't know. Finally, the boy spoke up himself, and in a very crisp voice, he said this. He says, "What I really want, I want to go home and learn how to ride my two-wheeler." Now, that two-wheeler was a bicycle Christmas present that he had gotten the year before. Had those little training wheels attached. But before the boy had gained enough confidence to remove the training wheels, the cancer had caught up with him. He had to go to the hospital, and learning to ride a two-wheeler just did not enter into the parents' thought pattern, or certainly the doctor's. The little boy was already physically weak, so why encourage him to do something that he's not going to be able to do very long, even if he could succeed in mastering the bicycle? But the boy insisted. And the resistance of the doctors and his parents gradually eroded, and finally they sent him home. Not 30 minutes before he got into his house, he went out in the yard, and there he was, having his father take off the training wheels and let him try riding the bike by himself. Father took out the wrench, removed the training wheels, let him go. To their surprise, after only two false starts, this little boy began riding the bicycle. "And now," he said with assurance in his voice, "now I want to ride it by myself all the way around the block." And before anybody could stop him, there he was, off, up and down the street, around the corner. There were those few moments as parents when you watch him, is he going to be able to stay on the bike? But he did. And finally, after all the way around the block, here he was, home with a gigantic smile on his face of triumph and satisfaction. And when the excitement had settled down, the boy went back to his bedroom, and he asked if he could just have a word with his little sister. His father had brought the shiny blue bike into the bedroom, and there it sat in the corner, which was for him a symbol of life. The little boy turned to his sister, and this is what he said. He said, "I'm not going to need this bicycle anymore, but I want you to have it for your birthday. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did." Well, that message of the resurrection, which sometimes comes in the shadow of death, in the midst of life's deepest struggles, we see the possibility of new life in the midst of death. When Jesus gave his life for us, he revealed to us that we too can move from death to life. We too can confront illness, or difficulties or physical suffering, we can go through the valley of the shadow of death because we know that we are in God's hands. That is the message of this Easter day. He is risen. He is risen indeed. Amen.